Food, one, the perfection of love, harmony and beauty, the only being united with all the illuminated souls who form the embodiment of the Master, the Spirit of Guidance. Let us progress onward now to the second stage in the process. This process of alchemical transmutation, which begins with a heavy, dense, opaque substance, namely lead, and which aims to evoke the light in it, to make it malleable and brilliant, to obtain gold. And the process begins under the sign of Saturn, who presides over subterranean happenings. And indeed, in the first stage of the process, we're digging underground, digging in the mud, amidst the embedded rocks and old roots, seeking to clear the ground, to prepare the ground. The Nabataeans held that Saturn was implicated in the parts of plants that descend, especially the roots, that which is under the surface, so the unconscious of the plant, the unconscious of our self, is our hidden motivations, as enacted in behaviors, habits that we constantly act out, but which we little observe. We don't see clearly the impulses that are impelling us, because we're so wrapped up in them, just like we don't observe ourselves thinking, because we're caught up in our thoughts, and therefore there's wonderful freedom and mastery to be attained simply by not only thinking, but watching yourself thinking. And watching with a certain passivity, not observing a thought and then leaping to a judgment associated with a fear, then again one is caught up in the whole loop of uncontrollable, unconscious, conditioned thoughts. But watching impassively, just seeing what rises, observing it, not pushing it away or clutching at it, but just let it be its own evidence. And then from that state of detachment, well, then you can undertake a kind of sorting, but it isn't that frantic, judgmental, self-castigating mania that all too often predominates, but instead it's a calm residing in presence, watching what arises, gently allowing the dissolution of what is merely mechanical or reactive, and more and more sinking down to the meaning behind it all, sinking right down. So instead of thinking so much about a person in a situation, you begin to appreciate the situation itself, what's at stake. Then in that situation, what are the qualities at play? What is the existential dilemma? Is there a challenge to bring into balance freedom and involvement, for instance, or love and self mastery? These begin to see the underlying interplay of qualities. So instead of merely thinking, "Oh, that person again," and I'm so frustrated with him or her or so forth, and enumerating all of the defects of that person, you'd really rather open a space for a refined discernment of the underlying horizon of possibility, the emergence of qualities, where qualities are obstructed. So this way of assessing one's life illustrates already the dawn of the second stage. So the first stage in alchemy is filtration, just ridding oneself of the dross, the dregs. The first process has to be relatively brusque and even crude. You have to just brush aside all of the excess and just to make some space for a finer investigation. Keeping silence is an important part of this. Just putting aside words, putting aside the compulsive distractions and frantic emotions, just create some subtle space. But now within that, then you can start to sort, to discern, discriminate. And so now the metal is tin, and the planet is Jupiter, who is, again, according to the Nabataeans, concerned with those parts of plants that reach up to the sky, so particularly the leaves that reach up toward the sun. And so you see there are those tendencies in you which are very atavistic, that just keep recoiling back unconsciously and reverting to outmoded habits. And then there are those progressive instincts in you. There are the fresh shoots. There is an unfurling, and it's reaching up toward the source of illumination. And that's where you want to turn your energy now in the second phase. So the first phase you had to accede to a certain frustration, being stymied in one's outer and inner life. Well, acknowledge it and submerge the whole problem in the, in the light of forgiveness and divine grace. And then with that assurance behind you, with that as a foundation, the sense that providence is something you can rely upon, then begin to do the more detailed work. And again, this is a work of sorting. In the same way that in our morning meditation, we began, first of all, shifting from a physical identity purely defined by visual evidence. In other words, we imagine ourselves to be what we see when we look in the mirror, to shift from that identity to an identity that is evidenced rather by presence. When you close your eyes, not what you think you look like, but what you actually feel when you sense your embodiment with closed eyes. And particularly when that sensing becomes finer and finer as the heartbeat slows down, the breath slows down. You notice your pulse, and then you notice a still finer pulse, which is the movement of energy surging through your limbs, but it's inapt to try to come to terms with that energy out of the context of the larger framework within which that energy fills you and drains out of you, and that larger framework being the whole energetic atmosphere of a room, of a landscape, of the planet, and of the cosmos itself. So the deeper that you descend into this process of tuning, sensing subtler fields of presence, the more simultaneously you are apprised of your continuous embeddedness in the fluctuating, pulsing fabric of the living universe. And then begins an odyssey of charting the terrain of this universe, not only geographically, but in terms of another dimension, which is the interior dimension. So the journey is not travel from one place to another, but travel within a single place through gradations of presence, reaching ever finer and vaster domains. And this itself is a kind of sorting, as we first shifted from a visual notion of our embodiment to an experiential perception of presence. But then, when we shifted from earth to water, we discerned even within the experience of energy, there are gradations or frequencies. And our task then becomes to ascend through them, to delineate them, and to rise to the higher pitches. So the second stage of the process is denoted by the term distillation. It's a sublimation or rarefaction of the substance, a substance which is initially inert and dense and opaque, is rendered through this process finer, more volatile, and expansive to the point of boundarylessness. So psychologically, the shift is from negation or filtration to provisional affirmation. So what we began by wanting to shake off the heavy load of our excess, but now to reach higher, we must avail ourselves of what is relevant. And of course, this is illustrated in the example of a mountain climber. The mountain climber doesn't leave everything behind, but selects those pieces of equipment which are suitable. Now, what provides one with the perspective or the discretion that enables one to wisely sort through what has accrued is a certain critical distance, a certain dispassion, which is to say an easing of one's identification with impressions, and seeing how all of this has accumulated over time. It isn't you as such, and yet what are you? In one sense, you are what you make of yourself. You are what you identify with. And from that perspective, all that has accrued is raw material of which you may choose to avail yourself or which you may discard in accordance with the purpose that that propels you. If your purpose is an unexamined purpose, then likely it is just the routine reiteration of old impressions leading nowhere. But if your purpose is the onward thrust of consciousness, moving from plane to plane through a succession of vehicles, assimilating, digesting, and eliminating the substance of all planes successively in accordance with that trajectory which is the purpose imparted to the endeavor by the divine imperative, then nothing is fixed, and creativity becomes possible. And it's precisely that creative reimagination of oneself that can actualize the ladder that leads right up to the summit of existence. All of which is to say that at this juncture it's helpful to step back and see the big picture of one's soul's descent hitherto. What has brought you to this point, and what has accrued in the process? But we do so not within the self-contained frame of our constructed ego, but within the infinite frame of the divine being. Because in the absence of that frame, our life means exactly nothing. Whatever meaning we possess is in relation to, as an expression of, the archetype of which we are the exemplar. And therefore, our own journey of becoming cannot be isolated from the mutually intertwined trajectories of all similar works in progress, and it cannot by any means be distinguished from the one reality that is ramified and elaborated and revealed through all of these trajectories. So we commence this consideration of our identity and becoming by invoking the one known to sacred tradition as Al-Hayy Al-Qayyum. The living, the ever-standing. Now, in truth, these two names are identical. But in fact, they are different. Here is where there's a divergence between truth and fact. Truth being the ultimate nature of being in the infinite eternal state. Fact being the subjective situation which pertains in the space of the self-manifestation of the eternal. So within the realm of fact, which is the world of time and space, the world of becoming, these two names take on different connotations. And now Al-Qayyum may denote for us the perdurance of the eternal in the midst of all change. Despite all ephemeral transformations constantly underway, the eternal remains the eternal. But what changes is not separate from the eternal. It isn't a separate substance, because then the eternal would not be absolute, it would not be boundaryless and total. It would be hemmed in, contradicted by something apart from it. So the eternal is not different from the ephemeral, but the ephemeral is the eternal within the condition of manifestation, which subjectively introduces the perspective of change of time and space. And within that framework, all necessarily is changeable. Within the subjective space of time and space, nothing is eternal. All is constantly breaking down and reforming. So we invoke these two names when we are conscious of this juxtaposition. Juxtaposition between the eternal and the temporal, and between the horizontal axis in which cause leads to effect, and the effect becomes a cause that leads to another effect, and how thereby a chain reaction creates a sequence of events, all under the aegis of Al-Hayy, divinity, animating change, transformation, and becoming, while transfixing the horizontal line of transformation is the vertical line in which a prior cause is not the cause of an effect, but in which each next moment is subsumed in the eternal. So when we begin to look at our lives in this manner, an expansion takes place. It's like waking in a dream and still dreaming. You know you're dreaming. So there is the sense of the absolute that is changeless and unaffected by all of these successive incidents. But then there is also the reality at its own level of what is unfolding. And you realize that that reality itself would be incomplete, life would be incomplete in the absence of one or the other, that the ocean naturally gives rise to waves. And yet every wave is soon lost in the ocean. So in this manner, see how your life is rooted in the changeless nature, and that foundation is unshakable. There is that life which lives forever victoriously, and it's the discovery of it, the recollection and affirmation of it is the most powerful awakening, because it absolutely dispels this haunting gloom of gnawing fear of oblivion, and this anxiety that imagines an abyss of non-being in which all meaning is swallowed up, that kind of nightmare that underscores our insecurities and fears. It's cancelled, it's uprooted and supplanted by the beholding of the inviability of the absolute. And then, within the absolute, then unfolds these many stories, these descents and ascents, these unfurling tendrils of meaning through which the one knows the one. So, Al-Hayyu, Ya Hayyu, Ya Qayyum, oh, you who abide and preside over every step of this unfurling path of discovery, and you who never changes, you who is always, forever, one, real, alive, knowing, living. Just look back over your life. look back over your human biography. Different events and gains and losses. There might be much that is, so to speak, neither here nor there. But there are learnings, there are growings, and perhaps one feels that if one had to start all over again, there is something that would be lost, that so that there's a distillation, a distillate of experience that you can identify as sort of the cream of your journey hitherto, hard-earned in many cases. Lessons hard won by virtue of mistakes and new beginnings. So just gather in the harvest of this life's learnings through the events that you have found yourself drawn to, or which have simply come upon you unbidden. And see how in this way personality is forming. Now, we all recognize in our personality that which is rough and crude and a source of dissatisfaction. There's work to do in jettisoning the excess, in smoothing the rough edges, in purifying and purging, but we have components, by virtue of our story, components of that vision of what might be, which our life is intended to reveal, otherwise we wouldn't have been born. And these episodes, even the harrowing ones, may be purposeful when sufficiently digested. So, for a moment, simply bear witness to this emergence of meaning in your life story, but under the overlighting presence of the changeless eternity and the thrust of the eternal moving through temporality. So we invoke Ya Hayyu, Ya Qayyum, Ya Hayyu, Ya Qayyum. Ya Hayyu, Ya Qayyum. Ya Hayyu, Ya Qayyum. Hayyu, Ya Qayyum. Ya 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 Hayyu, Ya Qayyum. Hayyu, Ya Qayyum. Ya 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 Hayyu, Ya But really, it is insufficient to analyze oneself as a historical personality, because this blood in us is the bloodline of those who came before us. Our body is the fusion of the bodies of our mother and father, and each of them is the fusion of the bodies of their ancestors. Our life is just one episode, actually, in a story which has many chapters and many personalities who are all really the various facets of humanity itself in its unfurling through time and space. And of course, humanity doesn't unfold itself in a vacuum, far from it. We're sustained by our continuous life transactions vis-a-vis plants and animals and the elements, the rivers and oceans and skies and fields and forests. So the flora and fauna that surround us actually penetrate us, and we are we lead intermingled lives. This earth is really one angelic organism of which we are each a fragment, an ephemeral fragment. And so now it would be apt to recontextualize our life story in the larger frame of the fluorescence of the earth. Moshe said the earth would not have intelligent beings in it if the earth were not itself intelligent. And so we need to stretch our imagination beyond what is normal, just as a little bacteria floating on our skin might not have the wherewithal to recognize the personhood of the medium in which it floats. That may be the case for ourselves. We speak of an environment, but here is, in fact, an angel whirling in space around a solar archangel in the midst of the celestial intelligences that are the stars. So let your own life story now unfold within the vaster narrative of the life of the cosmos and the intertwined stories of all of its animate parts, who together compose a shared meaning. And therefore, when we glean our heritage, when we glean that in us which we may avail ourselves of as a link that leads up to the absolute, well, this inheritance from the living universe, this consanguinity with all animate beings, this is an ancestry to celebrate and affirm. And we do so again under the sign of the name of the infinite, who is also the propeller of change in the realm of the ephemeral. Ya Hayyu, Ya Qayyum. 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 Right, now let's take another step in the the tracking of our genealogy. So here we are embodied in these physical formations that we call our bodies, and yet we have an intuition of being at some level of being formless and nameless. So there must be a segue between the invisible simplicity of pure intelligence and the concrete density of this sensible and sensory form. And it becomes clear that intermediacy is mind. Pure intelligence transcends mind, but in order to descend into embodied form, it must pass through mind. It must crystallize in a psychic structure, which lays the foundation for a physical structure. Which is to say, in intelligence there are no concepts, but in mind there arise ideas, and then ideas are incarnate bodily. So there is this descending progression through manifestation. So to reach this embodied state, we have descended through an interworld of pure mind, which is known as the sphere of the jinn, who are beings of mind, which is to say beings just like ourselves, but devoid of body. You could still be a self. For instance, if your mental processes were uploaded into a very advanced computer, one can imagine still being oneself, but not in this body. That is simply an illustration that that one can distinguish one's mental constitution. And in fact, those beings that have left this world behind live on, abstracted of body, but the mental sphere possesses a longevity which goes beyond the term of physical forms, but even that term is not eternal. So mental forms also, over time, break down and dissolve. And just as in the earth sphere, there is a constant recycling. There is no body that is not composed of something apart from the contents of prior bodies. When a body forms, it takes into itself the substance of those bodies that it appropriates through the act of feeding. So likewise, everything is recycled in the mental sphere. And our own descent into this world meant a passage through the world of mind, and that is a world populated by the thoughts of all those who have thought, the symphonies of all composers, and not only those whose symphonies have been recorded and transmitted on earth, but all findings, all epiphanies, all artistry, all perspectives accumulate in the mind world. It becomes a repository, a library of the ages. And our own descent has necessarily involved a passage through this plane, and in fact, contact with earth discoveries, with earth perspectives, even before incarnation. In this way, we were attracted to our own two parents, and we were made to incarnate through their contact. So a disincarnate soul in this way is drawn down to the earth. It's like hearing distant voices. Imagine yourself in a faraway, misty place, and then hearing in the distance voices. And then you approach them. You can first just hear the tenor of the voices and the tone and the pitch. But you come closer and closer, you start to make out words. Now suppose you hear different voices in different places. Well, you go toward those that draw your attention, that interest you, that attract you. In this way, the soul has descended through the spheres and has found its incarnation. And along the way, we pass through those beings that are, as it were, pure voice, not yet body, those beings that are disincarnate minds. And so already before incarnation and after incarnation in the course of our life, through contact with art and literature and music, this cultivation continues, the cultivation of the mind. It began before we were born, and now it is intensified in the course of our life, and even when we leave the body behind, that mental life is bound to continue. So consider your ancestors, not only the ancestors of your body. Consider your ancestors, the ancestors of your mind, the poets, the philosophers, and the preceding human minds whose perceptions and discoveries have paved a path that you follow. But at the same time, recognize that you're not bound by the constraints of any prior thinker. Our task is not to become entrenched in iteration of another's thoughts, but it is to use such intuitions and discoveries as springboards, so that all souls descending and ascending become, as it were, colleagues in the continuous unfurling and advancement of that great library and laboratory that is the collective mind. Ya hayyu ya qayyum. 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 Qayyum. Ya Hayyu, Ya Qayyum. Ya Hayyu, Ya Qayyum. Ya Hayyu, Ya So we have further to ascend in the tracing of the soul's genealogy, but we've come to the time when a pause is due. So feel your 2 feet on the ground. When you're ready, open your eyes. And in silence now, we'll have a half hour's pause.